Speaking of America not failing, only being failed, the Taliban's kicked the shit out of everyone. And Brett is in prison in Iran. Notably, it just randomly confirmed that the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq were actually real, in Ben's words, and now Iran
and
has them.
Buried. God.
And they're buried in Syria and taken in by Iran. Famous friends, Iraq and Iran, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Famously, they were buddies who were sharing weapons with each other, right?
Yeah,
that
yeah,
makes sense.
Iraq totally wasn't risen up by the United States and told to attack Iran to, you know, overthrow the regime and nationalize the soil.
And then in that same part, you have Prescott ignoring the signs that there's going to be a major terrorist attack, which has my favorite line from the book, which is an aide saying, "You remember 9/11?" Which is probably my favorite. "You remember 9/11?" Question mark. Which is probably my favorite line from the book. It's a pretty funny thing to say.
Famously,
remember
9/11? It's the thing that nobody forgot.
Never forget, right? But yeah, there was like a weird conspiracy thing. Is Ben being a 9/11 conspiracy theorist here? Because there's a whole thing about plane stock that he gets into here.
Yeah.
Which does not seem like a thing Ben would be on about.
Yeah, it's weird, right? I don't know entirely what to make of it, but like it's the because there's, I mean, you know, there's certainly issues with like the 9/11 commission, like a quarter of the information in it was extracted under torture. Like, you know, I'm not going to pretend.
Oh yeah,
I'm not
talking about us taking a stance. I'm surprised Ben sounds conspiratorial.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. Like, he's it's this
because it plays right into his hands by the official narrative.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's conservatives taking up the oxygen for questioning the official government narrative on things. Right.
Right.
It poisons the well.
Yeah. Before I go down that rabbit hole, probably just listen to this new season of Blowback and they'll probably have a much better analysis of 9/11 and theories around it. What else do we have? We get some more backstory on Bubba Davis. What do you know? He fought in Vietnam. He was an oil man who got rich and he ran on the platform of keeping Texas using oil. "Don't Let Them Hornswoggle You" was a reference to people trying to shut down Texas's oil field. We've all seen how well Texas's fossil fuels are doing for them these days when their grid fails every other week these days. Interesting how that works. He's a fourth term governor. That's pretty interesting. He runs his own militia. I'm just reading for this shit.
He's a self-made man with a bit of a bankroll from his father-in-law.
That's good, yeah. The small loan of $1 million.
Yes, yes. It's, God, yeah.
I will say this, when I picture Texas governor, this is exactly what I'm picturing. It's just not in a positive light like Ben is.
Lord God Almighty. Okay, so I know this sounds disjointed, but there's just a lot of stuff that happens in this book, and it jumps back and forth. And it's a lot of stuff that, to be clear, happens over a very short period of time, you know? But now we have Muhammad, the 17-year-old Taliban fighter. He's introduced as a character. He's going to be carrying out 9/11, too. That's his thing. And he's with...
The 9/11-ing.
Yeah, and he's with one of the book's antagonists. One of the book's... I think there's probably 90 antagonists in this book, basically. But Ibrahim Ashami, the, quote, world's best-known terrorist since Osama. Which is pretty funny to write that in, like, 2015, because Osama hadn't died that long ago, so it's, like, it's not been that long. You're saying it's, like, I don't know, it's just kind of funny. Anyway, he has Brett capture. There's a whole song and dance. He's making a tape. He's going to cut his head off. Brett blinks his location, but Prescott is too much of a lib to bomb Tehran, which Ben thinks is a good idea to start a war with Iran over a guy blinking on a video camera.
Not only, like, they're implying that organized terror would not notice, obviously, with blinking in Morse code, and the reason they have for that is because we're in the age of texts and cell phones.
Yeah, he's, like, randomly gets mad about, like, TikTok for a second. he just, not TikTok, but whatever was... Like, he just, I'm telling you, he gets red in the face and stamps his feet a bunch and forgets what he was talking
about. Well, and, like, does he believe that these people are primitives or not?
Yeah,
right?
Who fucking knows? Let me read my notes. Lib, woke, cuck, Prescott won't do the manly thing and start a war with Iran over some guy he hates blinking. So he does a failed bin Laden raid instead ungrateful fucking shit. Epic Prescott saved you and you're still mad.
Notably, this puts Jonathan Lincoln Duncan to the right of Prescott.
That's true.
In ordering that drone strike in Yemen that kills 7 children.
That's true. Because Prescott's too woke. But he does do a Bin Laden raid, which works very well, actually. Except for, like, he doesn't kill Ibrahim, but he saves Brett. And then Brett is, like, instantly mad. And that's why I wrote, Epic Prescott saved you and you're still mad. Prescott, look, love him or hate him, there were no casualties. He did a raid. He got, well, there were casualties of, you know, Arabs, but that doesn't count in Ben's eyes.
Oh, no.
But there was no American casualties, and we're still supposed to hate him for some reason. Because he didn't, again, start a war with Iran.
Ellen's
in a time where the U.S. is canonically bankrupt. It's a bad idea.
Yeah.
And getting their ass kicked. Do you think the U.S. getting their ass kicked by, okay, let's use Ben's logic. Just
turn
with me. Let's use Ben's logic here. The U.S. is bankrupt. The southern border is a literal war zone.
There's no money to pay for the Work Freedom Program.
There's no money to pay for jobs, so they can't finance a war with Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And the terrorists are stronger than they've ever been and implied backed by Russia. Ben, it's not fiscally intelligent to start a war with Iran right now. Fuck you, you people.
Oh my God. Someone else talk.
Ellen's notably... Ellen is watching this ISIS ransom video of Brett that's being broadcast, right? And she's... This is where we get into the way that he writes women,
mm-hmm.
Ben Shapiro does.
Really good.
Yeah.
That is one thing he does also have in common with Bill Clinton and James Patterson.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So she's watching the fucking, like pre-beheading video, and,
pre-beheading.
That jutting jawline she loved to kiss looked like skin stretched taut over bone. He looked like death. That was her first thought. Her second thought was that this could not be happening. Her man. The man she'd married and who had cared for her, and who had provided her strength and to whom she'd given her entire life. A man she had never questioned about his honor, even when the front pages of every major newspaper in America smeared it. Skip a bit of fawning.
It's horny for Brett.
Yeah, seriously. Right. Seriously, Ben Brett OTP. But there he was, his eyes staring out stolidly at the camera, wearing an orange jumpsuit, his face a mask of impassivity. Ellen knew one version of that look. The stubborn look that came into his eyes when they had an argument, and he set his mind that he was in the right. When that look came over his face, the argument was over. Even if he was dead wrong.
That's not good. That's not a healthy marriage.
Yeah, I was about to ask, am I alone in finding that terrifying?
No, that's horrifying.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and it's like... Ellen exists totally as a cipher, right? Totally as, you know, somebody for Brett to lean on, right? somebody for indeed Bubba Davis to lean on, right? In the workplace.
When they're being a woke lib and you got hit them with that Brett stare.
Yeah, the Brett stare. The care bear, Brett. I don't know. It's this thing of, you know, not only that Ellen's this, you know, perfect supportive wife, Stepford-ish, whatever. But she's repeatedly put in danger in a way that's really uncomfortably sexualized. Like, when she's captured by the cartels and Viv is iced earlier, right? It says... I wrote this down.
I mean, I still think my favorite thing with a woman in this book is describing a woman's long, sexy fingers.
Her sexy fingers manipulated the phone. Oh, yes. Okay, so when she's at gunpoint by the cartels, the sweat trickled down her lower back and into her underwear. She had time to think this wasn't very feminine. The last time Ben has mentioned underwear in that chapter where that happens, it was the ripped panties of rape victims, right? He luridly dwells on women being put in danger in this way. He's setting up a prurient frame of reference for people to read this in. In Spanish, one of the cartel guys says, oh, she shit herself. Like, it's just vile the way she's degraded here, right? And it's old as the hills, right? You have, in order to have this virtuous woman, like, you know, whether it's the Southern Belle archetype or just, you know, your standard virtuous white woman, their virtue has to be put in danger, right? They have to be put in danger of being brutalized or maimed or raped in some way, right? It gets the blood up of the conservative men reading this.
Ben loves to get his blood up. He's always... I just say it all the time. I just imagine him... You know he had to take breaks from writing this book so he could just, like, take a breather because he got so mad.
I mean, he's just seething over the
laptop. I had to take a cold shower. I had to reduce my body temperature or else I can't concentrate on writing this prose.
He's so mad. Yeah, so, you know, Brett gets back to America and then 9/11 2 happens. You know the thing in the prologue, it happens IRL, the fucking bridge blows up. Ben says, it says today's the only day they would show the footage before the psychologist would call it triggering. As if I don't have to see 9/11 footage, like,
as if
we
don't see school shootings happen, like, every fucking week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, this is interesting. Base Bubba doesn't send troops to help.
Uh-huh.
That's an interesting thing, because he says he has to keep his troops on the southern border, and he will not send them to New York to help.
He's like, I got dead kids washing up on the Rio Grande. Like, this, like... I mean, and Ben wrote this in 2016, but, like, what's going on at the Texas border these days? Greg Abbott is literally turning the fucking Rio Grande into a Super Mario Brothers level.
Yeah.
Putting fucking saw blades in the river for people to get mangled in. People have already died, children notably.
Yeah. And notably, it's almost silly to point out hypocrisy, but can you imagine if a liberal governor had, or, like, any kind of governor at all, had said, no, I'm not going to send troops to help with the terrorist attack, what they would be maligned as. Just very silly. So, yeah, Based Bubba doesn't send troops to help. Ellen gets sent to New York instead. And all the troops are descending on New York City to, you know, deal with this worst terrorist attack in American history. Meanwhile, we haven't heard from Soledad in a while. Anyway, she's scared of cops because being suspicious of cops is good and cool now. And she's leading anti-Antifa and is bringing her little group together and is now talking. Like, she's got, like, a Free Officers Corps movement going on because, like, she's got this dude Ezekiel who's like, we gotta hit them where it hurts. So, like, they're just straight up, like, talking about guerrilla war tactics. Mm-hmm.
They flee to North Dakota. We'll get to that. North Dakota's
just a note. Soledad still exists, and they're calling her the terrorist mama in the media.
Great title.
Oh yeah, it's the same energy as, like, hardcore Trumpers adopting the label of deplorable, right?
Yeah, I will say, Sydney, this was a funny interaction. We were joking about a racist book was earlier, and Sydney said, "Well, there is a black character. There's Ezekiel, the guy who helps out Soledad." And I was like, "Do you mind spoilers?" He betrays her. Oh, Lord Almighty.
I did find it weird that he noted that this character was black, even though it had nothing to do with anything.
Well,
he does
like the old person thing, who will, like, be telling a story and be like, no, this was a black man, mind you. And it's like, interesting.
Yes, you think of, like, Morgan Freeman or whoever, like, it's, although, Sydney, you bring up a really interesting point. Like, Ezekiel is the betrayer of Soledad, right? And Derek, who we'll hear back from in a minute, ends up becoming an FBI informant. Like, the major black characters are, to a man, turncoats.
Look, I won't say too much, but speaking of Soledad, if you read Soledad Brothers, it describes what should happen to people like Ben. Anyway,
rest in peace, George Jackson.
Yeah, absolutely, R.I.P. So, LaVon is now leading a group called FAIR, Fight Against Injustice and Racism. And it's like Answer Coalition or BLM or something. It's just one of those.
Just any coalition.
I like to imagine it's Answer Coalition.
Yeah,
we do work with Answer Coalition, so, you know.
Any group of people who tries to create organize on a mass scale to change things for the better.
Anyway, I'm going to give you a really unreasonable speech here. A second really unreasonable speech here. This is from Big Jim, the pastor, activist, civil rights guy. And this is getting into FAIR and LaVon, who's still doing his thing. And they're still, you know, mad for no good reason about a child being murdered. Because that, you know, we're still doing that. So let me just read you this speech from this absolute cretin, this horrible man. America, said Big Jim, is a land of second chances. You want to know why our community doesn't trust the police? They don't trust the police because to them, the police are strangers, and the other way around. And it takes more than living in the community a few months to earn trust. I'll tell you what, it takes more than even being a good policeman. It means having been through what these folks have been through. It means knowing that just because somebody got sent up to a prison for some stupid drug crime that wouldn't have gotten a white boy 6 months in the can, that doesn't mean their life should be over. It means understanding that there is a legacy of racism in this country, and that the police have historically been the arm of the racist establishment. That's the stuff you can only know if you've lived it. The reporter asked, "Are you saying that everybody in the force must be black?"
No, replied Big Jim. I'm saying that everybody has to have the right kind of experience, and if that means being black, that means being black. That's like a pretty reasonable speech.
Mm-hmm. I was just like nodding along, like, yeah, that sounds good.
Pretty reasonable. That's not even like, Ben isn't even capable of imagining like some kind of abolitionism or anything like that far left. The most far left thing Ben can imagine is like a guy saying that we need like police to understand the community. There's policing, and that mm-hmm. like, and he loses his mind.
Yeah, no word of abolition, you know, like just oh, you know, fundamentally changing the character of this, and that's what Ben is afraid of. That's what Ben is trying to inculcate in his readers is, you know, this fundamental fear of any change, right? And I mean, you know, to talk about what Big Jim and LeVon are for, you have to talk about what they're against as well. This was bizarre to me. At one point, LeVon is outside this city center, this community center rather. And he sees a statue, the Spirit of Detroit. It's a 25-foot-tall, loincloth-clad man carrying a golden sphere with rays emanating from it in one hand, a small family in the other hand. LeVon had never known what the statue was supposed to mean. It just looked like a constipated Nordic man to him. On the wall, a large inscription from Corinthians read, "Now the Lord is that spirit, and where the spirit of the Lord is here is liberty." Horseshit, thought LeVon, which I didn't know what to make of it at first, and you know, y'all can chime in if I'm off base or if there's something I'm missing here. But like, in my mind, you know, if you're Ben Shapiro's target audience, you're supposed to hate LeVon, right? And so the thought going through your head at this time is, well, if he hates that giant golden guy, if he hates the Nordic man, I guess I'm on the Nordic man's side, right? Is he kind of sheepdogging people into like the I mean, of course he's sheepdogging people into the nationalist
Sydney,
mindset.
You made a mention of the statue earlier today. Why don't you talk about that for a second? Because we've been there.
Yeah, like we were saying, we were just there. But my first note was that that's a horrible place to, if you want a large protest, absolutely horrible. It's right between two busy roads that are right between two very large buildings. It's just like a horrible little funnel area where you could not fit a very large amount of people, first off. And second off, we passed by that same statue, and we're like, hey, to my dad, who grew up right outside Troy, we're like, hey, what does that statue mean? And he's like, I have no fucking idea, no one knows.
Oh my god.
Yeah, no one cares. It's not.
No one cares.
It's just like a thing, and like, Ben wants to make it into this like beautiful, another beautiful monument that these people hate. Yeah, like you say, he's doing a sheepdogging thing. He's like, here's beauty, here's Judeo-Christian values, and this Athenian whatever he's doing is Jerusalem and Athens.
It's like Enlightenment, like,
yeah, and Nordic and beauty and family. And LeVon hates that.
LeVon, I tell you what, LeVon likes. He likes pretty white reporters who he can sweet talk with his. Again, Ben Shapiro is doing this thing where like he talks to like. White, young, blonde ingenues on the news, right? And it's, again, it's the most vile KKK shit, you know, except instead of, you know, a guy jumping out of an alley and attacking a girlfriend or whatever, it's a guy, like, you know, talking her around to his side on the news, right? It's, yeah, again, it's sexist, it's racist, it's,
and the implication that those are, like, somehow the same thing. Like, he's equating having a discussion about these ideals, like progressive ideals, with like sexual assault,
yes,
basically. Like that is the connection that he's making.
Well, yeah, because you know what's terrifying to conservatives? It's black people. What's terrifying to what's more terrifying than that? A mob of black people. What's more terrifying than that? A guy who can control such a mob.
Right, and that's LeVon.
That's LeVon.
And LeVon does that, and there's a whole. There's a whole thing where LeVon, like Big Jim's calming them down, and Big Jim says, "You be the Black Panthers, and I'll be the moderate
Black
that
Panthers.
Tricks everyone." And like, that's, I mean, we don't have to explain why that's stupid.
I mean, no mention of the fact that California's school lunch program came about because of the Black Panthers.
The Black Panthers went through the repression bin.
Yes.
That he lives under.
Yes.
And more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like.
No mention of their community organizing, you know, no mention of, you know, trying to engage black people in a political project that serves them.
Sydney and I, 2 days ago, were at an event advocating for the release of two Black Panthers who are still in prison.
which is just insane.
On, like, crimes that, again, are still, like, dubious in nature, that whether or not they committed. And to be clear, the because I'm riled up, the position of the socialist shelf is, even if they had taken up arms against the police, that's fucking right.
Yes.
But that's, but they don't even have good evidence that they did that.
Mm-hmm.
So, fuck.
Like, he clearly read a Southern, like, a Southern high school history book that just calls them terrorists and was like, this is 100% accurate. Yeah, mm-hmm. The Black Panthers are terrorists.
I like to imagine that Ben was like, you be the Black Panther. T'Challa. Like, he doesn't know. then we get back to a great quote. Because now everybody's sad because of 9/11 too. We have a really good quote. The American public had called the Iraq War too bloody. The Afghanistan War too costly. Combined, America had lost fewer than 7,000 people. And I want to note, first of all, I don't think that's correct. Pretty sure there were a lot more casualties than that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe correct me if I'm wrong. Second of all, millions of people died as a result of Iraq and Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah.
Across the region. And I understand Ben doesn't see Arab people as people.
I mean, he still has that tweet up that are like, oh, Israelis build things, Palestinians bomb things and live in gutters. Like, just the vilest shit.
Jeez.
He still has that up.
And
yeah, again, Brown University has that report now that, like, that has found that, you know, 4.5 million people at least have died as a result of the so-called war on terror. You know, millions more have been displaced. You know, that, again, Ben's not going to engage with that. Those people aren't human to him.
Well, Brown University says it's closer to 15,000 people who have died in Iraq and Afghanistan. So, first of all, Ben's not respecting the troops very much by saying 7,000. I'm talking about Americans here.
Yes, yes.
First of all, Ben's not respecting the troops very much with the 7,000 number. Ben, shame. You don't respect the troops. Ridiculous.
Has Ben Shapiro gone woke?
I think he has. I think he has. And it's our job to put him back to sleep here. Anyway, Brett's trying to solve 9/11 too. He calls his friend Derek, who is now named Hassan Abdul.
Oh, yes, yes.
I'm going to pause it. I need to take a break. Hassan Abdul, Brett's former friend Derek, who sang Ebony and Ivory, he converted to Islam, named himself Hassan Abdul. For a while, he was fine with Islam. Then he saw 9/11 and he became a mole. But woke President Prescott doesn't allow COINTELPRO on every single mosque anymore, which is apparently a bad thing. So he's not been allowed to be an FBI informant for a while. But yeah, he's an FBI informant. And now he's going to help Brett catch the 9/11 2 doers. Because, you know, every Muslim knows every other Muslim, as you know.
Oh, yes. Yet. Well, and in particular, he's built up a network of cameras that allow him to peer into every mosque in New York. It took him several years, he says.
And it's considered a bad thing that the president isn't cool with spying on all the mosques. And like a couple notes. First of all, they absolutely do spy on all the mosques.
Mm-hmm.
So so jot that down. But second of all, just the idea, and then Ben is like, it's because of wokeness or whatever. But like, Ben does, like, especially when it comes to like Muslims and Arab people,
mm-hmm.
He shows his hand. He never is able to hold it in and just say like the good ones or whatever. In Ben's mind, there are no good ones. This is the one Muslim character who is decent. He's a black guy. I don't think there's a single Arab character in the book that Ben sees as anything close to redeemable.
No.
And even this guy was like cool with like Al-Qaeda and stuff prior to 9/11. Like, he had to see 9/11 to whatever. And he has to be a mole. Like, he's not able to just exist as a human in the world. No one is. Later on, you'll be introduced a peace-loving Muslim imam who is, of course, secretly trying to set off a nuclear device in New York. We'll get to that. But,
and the way
Jesus.
That Ben talks about America and talks about, you know, the decision of Derek/Hassan to switch sides, essentially. Like, he says right here, from Brett's perspective, we don't have to tape beheadings to frighten people into joining us. I mean, never forget that the shock and awe bombing of Iraq was done at the time when the East Coast would be watching the evening news. We don't take beheadings. We destroy entire countries. We level cities to frighten people into joining us. Like, it's just deranged how much projection he's engaging in here. It's that, and then, oh yeah, we missed the prayer scene with Brett. When he's imprisoned, and like it's the emotional climax where it's this breakdown of hope, and he's turning into something mystical, white, we assume, white Jesus.
Oh, so that in particular cracked me up because he had just got done mentally making fun of people's faith in Allah, and then immediately goes and prays to what he seems to have forgotten is the exact same God.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
If God's mad at him. That would be funny if God was like, no, dude, you're just being mean. No. Okay. So, we've got that running plot line. It's a running plot line where Brett runs around New York. It's very tiresome. There's this whole bit where Brett is trying to outrun federal agents and, Hassan gets killed by the people who work for this imam who he's not actually peaceful. There's gonna be a nuclear attack, and Brett fights with these guys in a hotel room, and there's this whole bit. There's this guy with a scar who's gonna end up being a Secret Service agent. It's all very tiresome. Ellen shows up at a certain point. Eventually Brett just gets arrested.
This is off topic, but did you notice that everybody in this book has blue eyes?
There's like a few with green, but
yeah. President Prescott, the kid Muhammad who's doing 9/11 too. Who else?
There's a couple.
Yeah. It's weird and it doesn't mean anything, but like it's something that Ben Shapiro takes special time. He takes special time to point out, and I'm not sure why.
It's a very like just very specific neuroses that are working in this man's brain. The bread plot line gets interminable. You would think it couldn't be this boring, but like I'm telling you, the chase scene where he like jumps on the subway. I don't know how it's so dry, but it's just it's nothing.
I had to reread it like 3 times because I kept thinking about like, I wonder what's happening on Twitter, and realizing I was not paying attention.
It's nothing. It's empty.
It's funny to me that he names Arab characters the same way that fucking H.P. Lovecraft did, you know?
Yeah.
Hassan Abdul all has red. And yet he somehow can't write action sequences like H.P. Lovecraft could. Mm. Like fucking, I would rather read Shadow over Innsmouth.
Oh yeah.
Than you know read the fucking subway chase again.
Yeah.
Because at least the Shadow over Innsmouth thing is physically plausible. Remember, Brett's still recovering from a broken arm.
Ben makes the shootout in The President Is Missing look like just high tier shit.
Mm-hmm.
He makes it look like it's just like some of the greatest writing of all time. Like compared to this book, The President Is Missing, like the whole part where the president is like Duncan is like fighting as his own Secret Service guard is like just straight up like James Bond, amazing, most John Wick ass cool thing ever happened. Anyway, okay, shit's still going on in Detroit. So now that the DA, in an insane move, part let the cop off, which, like, doesn't make any sense. The LaVon has, and this is a quote, organized an old-fashioned lynch mob. And that is
the most hideous possible term to describe.
It's on purpose, you
yes.
know?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's so intentional.
He knows what he's doing.
And they've surrounded the prison and are occupying the area around the prison and basically saying, oh, great, give us our justice. No, he very specifically has no justice, no peace, repeated a lot of times. A famous thing that has been repeated for years at protests. Interestingly enough, Anti-Antifa to the rescue, led by Soledad. They are coming in to save the police officer because for some reason, Aiden, the SWAT guy, knows him from back in the day when he got him off drugs or some bullshit.
Yeah, he was one of the two white families left in Detroit.
Yeah.
Aiden, also famously blue-eyed, described as such. See, that's the thing. Like, I thought he was describing all the villains as having blue eyes, but Aiden's on, like, Soledad's side, so I'm not sure what he's going for here, if anything. But, yeah, they're, like, based out of North Dakota.
Aiden, the only good thing a Predator drone ever did happened to Aiden. But we'll get to that. Levon's forces gets faced down by, they don't really have a name, but anti-Antifa. And they wear, for some reason, shirts that say, "Fight the Thugs" on it. And then they are amazed that the media portrays them as white supremacists.
Yeah, yeah. God forbid, you know, that you describe people who are, you know, whose communities are brutalized and over-policed and terrorized as, and who are seeking some form of justice. I want to say don't be surprised if people match your energy, but they could never hope to match the repressive energy of the American police apparatus. Like, there's no comparison.
So then Big Jim, the pastor, gets assassinated. Unclear.
Jim's dead, Jim.
Yeah, does it say explicitly Levon orders his death, or are we just supposed to kind of guess at that?
It's
completely unclear.
Yeah.
You can just imagine whoever you wanted killed him, pretty much.
And mm-hmm. He does, like, a sort of, like, I think Ben is, like, trying to do, like, a reference to, like, that riots after MLK died, or, like, one of those things. Mm-hmm. Like, because, like, the people are now, like, that was their voice for, it was a cynical voice for peace, but it was a voice for peace. He's now gone, and this is, you know, this is Levon's moment to be, like, he's the only guy left.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, Levon's, you know, ready to roll. They are invading the prison. They are busting in.
And Ben points out, the protesters know that eventually the cops will crack. Mm-hmm. Which, like, he's weaving the sense throughout the story that the repressive force of the state, you know, police have killed more and more people every year for the past 10 years, but he's sowing this idea that the repressive force of the state is fundamentally afraid of doing what needs to be done, with capital letters. Right?
And yet, he's afraid of the repressive forces of the state when they're pointed in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
The state is somehow too weak and too strong. The state is too big, and yet it doesn't have the power to do what needs done. It needs to be able to, without any provocation, drone strike sovereign nations and start wars. And it also shouldn't be capable of deciding collectively what is done with the state's limited water supply.
And most importantly, you know, and this is where Ben has the same position on lynching as Rebecca Latimer Felton, when the courage of the state fails, white militias from North Dakota rallying around a rancher lady need to step in and restore order.
Yeah,
of course.
Absolutely. So they free the racist-ass cop.
Who is friends with Aiden. We get, like, a few paragraphs of backstory, like, up front to, oh, by the way.
Yeah. Ben makes us pause for this interminable bullshit. There's, like, they flee. The scenes in the prison are, like, unbelievably racist. Like, the part where they gasp. The room was full of young black men. Like, Ben! Jesus Christ, Ben!
Terrifying.
I meant to say, the imam's name, who is, like, the imam of peace, who secretly wants to blow up New York, his name is Anjem Omari. I just bring that up because I wrote down least evil Muslim in Ben's eyes. Also, has the gall to think Palestinians are human.
Yeah.
Because Ben likes to get some digs in Palestine City. There was one in particular you noted after the terrorist attack.
It was when after the bridge fell, the news was panning to different Muslim countries, showing them all, like, being happy and celebrating. And for some reason, like, explicitly noted that Palestinians were throwing candy in the streets. And, like, was there something I missed in 2016 about Palestinians and candy, or was that just really weird word choice?
Oh yeah, well, I mean, it's that, you know, old it's that old canard about Muslims celebrating 9/11. You know, that's what he's conjuring up here. I mean, as a matter of fact, you can express regret over American losses in one disaster or another while acknowledging American imperialism as the proximate cause. That's materialism.
Yeah, Anjem Omari says, "I denounce 9/11, but I also say if we're going to be sad about 9/11, we should also be sad about the thousands of Palestinians who died." And that's seen as cynical and bad.
he's using talking points from the quote-unquote woke left here, right? He says, Omari spoke frequently about jihad as an internal struggle, which is what it is. That's the greater jihad. That's going through every day trying to be a good Muslim, right? It's, again, he's holding up facts and he's tainting them, right? By saying, oh, but they come out of the mouths of these people who are doing horrible things. Like, it's just vile. I keep using the word vile, and that's what, because that's what it is.
Everything is speeding up incredibly fast now. It's jumping all over the place. I just wrote down People's Republic of Detroit. I believe that's in a reference to the fact that at a certain point, the president calls LaVon and is like, okay, can you restore order in Detroit? And he's like, sure, if the people get their demands, because LaVon is a good organizer. Texas is heating up. A National Guardsman murders a bunch of innocents. He's, you know, of course, just a bad apple, a lone gunman.
Of course.
And Bubba says some bullshit about, oh, we've always been on the same... He says, on the same thing since the Alamo. And Ben doesn't know how right he is on accident. He's saying Texas has been fighting the same fight since the Alamo. In that way, he means fighting the good fight on the border. In actuality, that's incredibly accurate. Because the people in the Alamo were on Mexico's land. And it's the same imperial project ever since then.
Yes.
Please refer to our Blood Meridian episode.
Yes. Gerald Horn writes about this in the Counter-Revolution of 1836. Right? The Anglo settlers in Texas were afraid that that Mexico, who had a black president by that point, would take away their slaves.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they rebelled.
Let's see. My notes say, and again, this sounds incoherent. This book is incoherent. Ezekiel, the one black guy in anti-Antifa, sells them out, and they get hit with a hellfire missile in the middle of Tennessee. I will say, okay, I laughed out loud at this part. So you have Soledad and her gang riding down the road. Ezekiel sells them out, and a predator drone rolls up and just drops a hellfire missile on them. Because Soledad and Ricky are so epic, they escape, but Aiden gets blown to absolute shit. Critical support for the Predator drone in this moment.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. Let's see. Hassan got murked. There's going to be a nuclear attack.
Ezekiel, we should talk a little bit more about Ezekiel.
I don't have a lot to say, but if you have something to say.
Well, what he says here, I think, sums up the philosophy of this book pretty well. Let's see. So he's talking to Soledad about like battle strategy. Like, I always say the best defense is a good offense. So does Clausewitz. He's read on war, I suppose. When your force is small, concentrate it and hit them where they're weak. Who are they? The same people who shut down your farm. The same people who attacked you. Those people are Americans. It isn't American to do those things. America means more than being born here. It means believing certain things. You know, notably, Ben doesn't elaborate on what those certain things are, you know, but if you're in the target audience reading this, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know. It's that dog whistle. It's that dog whistle of, you know, we need to protect America from these immigrants. We need to protect America from these terrorists. Who are the immigrants? Who are the terrorists? Oh, they're people who want police to stop shooting black kids. It's that, and again, you know, it's that classic fascist thing of, it is the right of the ruling class to rebel, and it is the duty of the paid bourgeois, the working class, to do class collaboration in this cause. And B, there are certain people in your country who are not actually your countrymen.
So there's going to be a nuclear attack on New York.
Oh, yes.
9/11/2 wasn't enough.
Oh, 9/11.
No, 9/11/2 was the initial bomb before the second car bomb. You see, Ben knows how to do literary analogies.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah, it's a reference to Mockingjay.
We should do Hunger Games.
We should.
And just talk about the YA trend of that era. But anyway... Soledad now decides she's going to assassinate the president. Brett is with the president, and the president is all like, Brett, I'm going to either get your ass arrested or you're just going to stop doing this insane shit and trying to stop 9/11-3 from happening. And Brett's like, yes, sir, Mr. President. And then he lied. And he says, take a bullet for you, babe. And sees Ellen briefly and runs away. And there's this whole mess where his plan is to, like, I don't even know what he's planning to do, but the president's giving a press conference and Brett's like running around. Soledad pulls out a 3D printed gun and Brett saves the president's life like a fucking dumbass just to like force an intersection in their plot lines for no particular reason. And then you just, it ruins the imam's plan to do a nuclear bomb attack on the president there.
Do we know where the nuke came from?
Iran. Yeah, it came from Iran.
I thought it came from that Russian guy.
No, it did come from the Russian guy, but he was working with Iran.
Oh, yeah, there's a Russian guy who's, like, a go-between. Again, like, that's it's the fucking bipartisan, like, Russia is the villain. Russia is the go-between, right? They can't come at us directly, so they gotta do, like, all this subterfuge. It's nonsense. Ellen, at this point, is coming to New York to see her husband. She meets, what is this? Oh, yeah, this guy from the New York Daily News, who's like a contact of hers, who knows everything that's on the ground. We're 20 pages from the end, and there's a new character there. Like, that's the thing. None of these characters are characters. The only characters the beats they get are in flashbacks. These are devices that Ben's using in his fucking KKK-ass agitprop. Yes, that's right, Ben. You're a fucking Klansman. I'll say it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Secret Service agent who's actually evil brings a nuclear bomb onto Air Force One. And Ellen is on Air Force One, and she has a heroic moment where she's going to save the day and doesn't.
Yeah, no.
Could someone explain this part to me? Just to describe this to the audience, instead of blowing up the president, they do blow up the president. They put a nuclear bomb on Air Force One, and they blow up the nuclear bomb over New York City. But it portrays Ellen as having a savior moment where she says, take a bullet for you, babe. And she, like, stops it. But she doesn't. So what's going on there?
And notably...
Someone explain this.
Okay, so, like, she's on the thing. She's on the plane with... she's on the plane with Omari. And Omari stands up. And, oh, it turns out that he's got a bomb. And this is a baffling moment to me. Like, the other passengers looked around uncomfortably, paralyzed by a peculiar inability to overcome their political correctness.
That was really good.
They're literally too woke to stop plane hijacking.
Yeah, have y'all considered wokeness?
Yeah, suddenly it hit her. Muhammad had not sought out Omari for help. Muhammad had been a courier to Omari, bringing him a weapon. So, yeah. So she's now in the middle of this, and yes, you're right. She has the savior moment. Again,
she doesn't save anyone, because the bomb still goes off,
I think,
right?
Her thought process was, if I set it off here instead of when we get slightly closer to New York, I'll save people. But it explains that they were already, like, low to the ground over New York.
Was that the... Yeah. Am I wrong about this? Did she save anyone?
No, it describes many people turning to dust.
Washington Heights, Fort Washington Park, tenements blew apart like a house of cards, people get degloved, turned to ash, we're supposed to assume that, I mean, she literally...
Because of political correctness.
Well, because literally she says, like, oh, you know, this is why God struck me barren, right? This is why my ability to have kids was taken away, because I had this higher purpose, right?
But to do what?
To
nuke New York.
to nuke New York, like, slightly to the left.
Ben wouldn't do anything slightly to the left.
Ah.
And it's not like she's portrayed as, like, it's portrayed as, like, a failure. It's just, like... Like, is this, like, leftover from another plot and Ben just didn't have an editor? Like, I don't know what this is supposed to mean. It doesn't matter. New York City fucking gone is what happens. And now Vice President Allison Martin in charge. And she blames Ellen and the state of Texas, not the Muslims. The woke has won the day. Meanwhile, LaVon is running the People's Militia. LaVon basically gets on a call and says, I'm going to run all the police departments in the United States. It explicitly says the police department got younger and blacker.
good.
And yeah. And it's like people are quaking in their boots. And oh yeah, this is a nice little tidbit here. Not really tied into the main story because Ben doesn't hardly has that. But there's a bit where LaVon, basically the power company is shutting off people's electricity. So LaVon sends the police to basically make the power company turn back on the electricity. He turns back on the electricity. He guarantees power to everyone in the Detroit area.
Good.
And that's it.
Literally good.
How and we're supposed to just be just crying our eyes out at like this poor monocle wearing billionaire somewhere who's not making money. The people of Detroit have money. Like, I don't know how I'm supposed to be mad at LaVon. Like, they're...
It's people getting electricity who haven't earned it, Jacob. How can
it's
you
true.
Not see that?
They did earn it. They built a people's militia and fucking claimed it for themselves.
Well,
I'd say they earned that pretty damn fair and square.
Well, only white ranchers and bikers from North Dakota get to build a people's militia and wage a protracted people's war.
Yeah, speaking of, they break Brett out of prison. Because Brett goes to prison briefly after all this. Yeah, he's like just being held in a cell somewhere and they break him out. And the ending is left sort of on a cliffhanger. Brett is out of prison and Soledad saves him and says, "Where to, General?" And you have this whole thing where Bubba, you know, his state does not vote to impeach him. And instead, a bunch of governors are calling him and like, "Are we going to stand together?" And you have a bit where like, apparently China and Europe are fielding a coalition army to help invade Texas.
And Canada,
of course. And there's a Chinese aircraft carrier, and that's like the only brief reference to the debt. Is like there's a slight moment of like feeling like the superiority over America. I don't
know
if
there's
an explicit
general or admiral or whatever. Like, well, and again, like we had 10 years of federal troops occupying the South during Reconstruction, and then of course the corrupt bargain of 1876, you know, got rid of that. Like, if we're not gonna do it, somebody fucking has to.
Right, and we are doing it in this book. It's just against Bubba, who is now an insurrectionist, to be completely clear.
Oh yeah,
like,
he's
like, they call me
an insurrectionist. He's invaded Mexico. Did we skip that?
Yeah. No, we didn't skip it. We talked about
Texas
it.
Texas invaded fucking Mexico.
Yeah, no, and we did mention that, and there's not much to say, because there's not much to say about it. It's just, like, left off, like, yeah, he invaded Mexico, he killed a bunch of drug dealers, and it was fine. Or whatever. Like, as if there would be no problems. No, he is an insurrectionist. He is an insurrectionist who does have blood on his hands. Like, I don't know what else to say. He's like, they're calling me an insurrectionist. And it's like, well, you are fighting against the military, which is invading your state right now. So, it seems like you're an insurrectionist. So, yeah, the book leaves off on this point. It leaves off on the police are run by LaVon. There's a woman president.
Hey, this is like the third female character that Ben knows how to write. You know, you have the, you know, dewy-eyed, like ingenue reporter chick. You have the, like, warrior, like, shield maiden, whatever that fucking Ellen is.
Run high fight, yeah.
Yeah. And then you have Allison Martin, who, her speaking style is mechanical. She was unlikable. She did not have the charm of Mark Prescott. She did not inspire. She was, as she liked to think of herself, a grinder. She did not, she reminded her subordinates, tolerate losing. She's just like a cipher. You know, she's, I mean, this is basically...
It's like Hillary.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what Ben's doing, you know? And
Ben's doing Hillary. But if Ben hates female politicians so much, why does he keep asking AOC for feed pics? I don't know. I just... I've seen the DMs. They're real.
Well, actually, no. You know what? Because he has that line earlier, you know, Bubba Davis is listening to his secretary's sexy fingers manipulate the phone. The feet pics, I'm calling it out right now.
Okay.
The feet pics were a deliberate poisoning of the well against people finding out his true fixation, which is hands.
It's a good point. It's a good point. So, yeah, the book concludes on a cliffhanger with Brett hopping in the car with these insurrectionaries and they're like, where to next, General? Fucking stupid.
Can we just read this whole exchange?
Yeah,
between...
just read it.
Yeah.
Just read it.
He meets up with Soledad. "My name is Soledad Ramirez," she choked. "I'm here to get you out of the city."
You're on top of the Avengers Initiative.
"You tried to assassinate Prescott. What do you want with me?" Soledad looked at him seriously. "Do you want to stick around? If so, get out right now." Brett looked at her. "You're that terrorist." "I prefer rancher. The government made me a terrorist."
So true.
"No," said Brett, "you made you into a terrorist." The first correct thing that Brett has said.
Finally.
"You're free to get out at any time." Brett went silent. She started the engine. "For what it's worth," she said, looking straight ahead, "I'm sorry about your wife, General Hawthorne. I'm sorry for this country. I'm not sorry what happened to Prescott. None of that matters." "Where are we going?" "I figure you're the general. You pick." Brett thought for a moment. Then he looked to the horizon again, to the murky cloud of ash blotting out the rising stars. He set his jaw in a look Ellen would have recognized instantly as unshakable determination, or presumably that she's about to get his. "Let's head west," he said. "I'm going home." And home, for Brett, of course, is not anywhere in the States at this point. Home, he realizes, is wherever is engaging in their right to rebel against the government that has gone woke, right? Home, presumably, is Texas, or you know, whatever parts of California are rallying to Soledad Ramirez. Home, perhaps, is North Dakota, you know? Because that's the thing. Like, when Ben Shapiro is talking about your true allegiance, it's not merely to a country, not merely to the United States of America. America is a means to an end. He's talking about your allegiance to the country within the country. The ruling class, the owning class, the white supremacist, settler, colonizer class, which has subsumed into itself all those willing to play their game. You know, if you read Democracy in Chains by Nancy MacLean, you know that American bourgeois democracy has developed along the course that it has through assiduous struggle. On the side of the working class to expand the franchise, on the side of the owning class to restrict it. Not just the franchise, but, you know, democratic rights in general. And when it becomes clear that concessions can be wrested from our bourgeois democratic institutions, from even a body as reactionary as the Supreme Court, you know, the bourgeoisie will do all in their power to take those institutions away. And when they seek to alter the superstructure in that way, they will recruit as many of the petty bourgeois and working people as they can to this destructive end of theirs by giving them a stake in this war they're declaring on immigrants, on LGBT people, on black people, whoever else. That's what Ben is doing with a book like this. He's saying, hey, we need to collaborate on this, against this this government that has stopped serving you. And by you, he means us, the wealthy, the rich, right? And they need to be hounded and resisted at every turn. Not on Spotify, not on Twitter, not on YouTube, but in the streets. So we can tear up the base they build their foul empires on and replace it with something better.
Joss, you considered woke? PC?
I am a PC guy. I'm not a Mac guy. I'm a PC guy through and through.
No, you're absolutely right. It is... I mean, look. The dunk on Ben Shapiro is a tried and true... It's a tried and true tradition, you know? It's an easy thing to do. And that's why we're doing it. you know, but also, Ben represents a real ideology. Ben is not... You know, a nobody. I don't mean to say Ben Shapiro is going to be the fascist leader that we're up against. He's not a leader. He's a fucking little whiny guy who will do his thing and would never pick up a gun and would never do anything like that. But there are freaks out there who can and do pick up guns and murder people. And whether that expresses itself just in sporadic violence, as it does now and has for a long time, whether that manifests itself in, you know, just random terror attacks, whether that manifests itself, you know, through the police, or whether that manifests itself in Ben's dream of a militia that rises up and crushes the woke lids in his mind, which is everyone who doesn't agree with him in his vision. Whatever the case, this is a real ideology with real teeth to it in certain ways. And it is important for us to do this and to call out how absurd it is. It's important for us to laugh at this. It's important for us to make the point that these people are not particularly intelligent, and there is something encouraging about that. It's also important for us to realize, though, that this is a real framework that people are thinking from, that are working from. There are people who read this book, like the review I read at the beginning of this podcast, who say this is just like Joe Biden's America and it is our right to rebel. And look, I don't have the ability to predict the future. I don't know how many of the people who read these books, who follow Ben Shapiro, who believe in this stuff, have the guts to actually band together and like do something. I don't know what kind of fascist militias are in our future or not. But what I do know, what I do know is this sort of thing begets violence, and this sort of thing defends the already existing institutional violence that happens. It defends the police officers who kill the Tamir Rices of the world. It defends the murders overseas. It defends America's imperial projects. It defends people who fight back against even the most basic climate policies. It defends the most atrocious horrors at the border. And so for that, like, this book is very funny. Like, it is hilarious. I laughed out loud multiple times reading this book. But, like, these are people that have to be organized against. But if you take anything from this, take this. These people are beatable. If for no other reason, then they are fucking morons who think Ben Shapiro is fucking smart. And that, if nothing else, should give you some hope. Sydney, what are you thinking right now about this book? You've been laughing a lot, smiling a lot, but I know you've got some more thoughts about this.
Oh, well, my number one thought was, thank God this was written in 2015 and not currently, or else every single villain would be trans and your kids.
That was surprising to me. There's very little, if any, LGBT stuff in this book.
There's one reference to, they think our enemies are trying to get us to bake cake, or people who don't want to bake cakes, but in reality, they want to set off nuclear bombs over New York City.
Which, yeah, he said that shit, like, A, apropos of nothing. But yeah, B, that's the only mention of any of the LGBT ideology, which, I mean, I wonder if it just wasn't in vogue at the time.
Just wasn't really the issue. Like, you think back to, like, the 2016 election, everything around, it just wasn't really being argued about that much.
Mm-hmm.
These people are very much, like, there are a lot of references in this book that I remember from very specific Fox News news cycles and, like, right-wing Twitter. There's probably even more that I don't remember that I just was not privy to, or my memory isn't. But you're absolutely right, Sydney. This would have been, if it was written now, it would be trans ideology. It would use the word woke a lot more.
It'd be a terrorist named Sock.
The sock car bombing. That actually sounds really cool, and I'm here for it. I don't know, but Sydney, that leads to a question. If there was a sequel, would it be revealed that LaVon was trans? Because I really hope I'd like to make.
I really hope so. Or at the very least, he would have an educational program that is transing your kids or something.
LaVon
like
has
it.
A gender studies major.
God, that would be incredible. See, but that's the thing. I don't think this is supposed to set up for a sequel, right? It's a bleak ending, certainly. And I think the message here that, you know, Ben is trying to send to, you know, the target audience is, look, we're at war, and the government's bigger and badder than you are, so you've got to carry this energy out into the real world and be bigger and badder than them. And here's the thing, Ben. There's a lot more of us out there than you think there are. The woke mob is bigger than you and scarier than you could ever be.
That's true. Even in your own book, actually, there's like five members of that anti-antifa group. Like, in your own world, you're massively outnumbered. I think he kind of had a sequel in his head. I just have that feeling from a few threads in the book, just from some things that are left open, from the introduction of this new character as president that he seems to want to work with, the introduction of a Chinese villain.
I expected LaVon to, like, get on a Zoom call with, like, Premier Shang. Or
oh, that
whatever.
Would kick so much ass.
That'd be awesome.
And, like, the LaVon in general, there's just some stuff that, I'm not saying that you're not right, that he isn't saying go out and do this isn't the mission, but I think Ben maybe has this, like, had a germ of an idea for, like, something more, and this book just didn't sell for shit. But I don't know. I don't know at the end of the day. I know Ben was apparently mad that no one wanted to make a TV or film version of this, which is really funny.
If he didn't have a sequel planned, that just makes the ending all the more worse.
Well, it's okay, because, I mean, at the end of the day, though there is some sacrifice, you know, Prescott LaVonism wins the day. The insurrectionists will soon be crushed in Texas. And, you know, global communism will soon be instated. So, nothing to worry about, guys.
Yeah.
And Ben's, because, like, let's be honest, in the world of Ben's book, Soledad's cooked. They're gonna just get Hellfire missiled again. Bubba doesn't have a chance. He's got the Coalition army coming against him. So yeah, actually everything's gonna be fine, and we're gonna live in a nightmare world where we have racial equality and free electricity and less foreign intervention, and we don't arrest every Muslim person. And Ben is just gonna have to deal with that. But no, I know Ben wants us to rise up and fight against this world. But like, even by Ben's even in Ben's world, his odds look pretty bad. I gotta be honest. The odds look pretty stacked against him. But you know, we're pretty close to it, as Ann Coulter said. This is 5 minutes from happening. I'm calling up LaVon any minute now. You might be the guest next week on our podcast.
Well, timer starts now.
Timer starts now. Counting down. Well, folks, I don't know that it's been real or it's been fun, but it has been real fun. What other thoughts y'all have before we bring this thing home?
I just want to close us out, I think, with the about the author bit here.
Oh, no.
There's a couple of paragraphs. The first one is, you know, his credentials, like, you know, nationally syndicated columnist in 17. The second paragraph here is one of the most self-aggrandizing, pathetic things that I've read. Like, it's just talking heads from the right rizzing up Ben. It says, Rush Limbaugh says Shapiro isn't just content to have people be dazzled by his brilliance. He actually goes out and confronts and tries to persuade, mobilize, motivate people.
He harasses children.
Yes, you're right. Glenn Beck calls Shapiro a warrior for conservatism, against those who use fear and intimidation to stifle honest debate. I've never known him to back down from a fight. Sarah Palin says that Americans should consider Ben's advice about how we must stand up and push back twice as hard against this bullying. Sean Hannity says to join Ben Shapiro and fight back against liberal bullying. And Michelle Malkin, author of the of that one book that defended like Japanese internment camps, says Shapiro is infused with the indomitable spirit of his friend and mentor, Andrew Breitbart. Even the liberal Washington Post, in the aftermath of Shapiro's devastating destruction of Piers Morgan on national television, conceded that Shapiro is a foe of extraordinary polemical agility. I mean, if we're fighting against somebody who has to jerk himself off this hard, odds are, you know, we're going to catch him in the middle of a refractory period, and he'll be easy.
Ben has never backed down from a fight. So this is a public invitation for Ben to come to my house and fight me at any time of the day or night. I would love to fight Ben Shapiro. I think that's the message of this podcast is Ben square up.
Pugilistically speaking, you're quite a tall man, and I'm quite a short man, and therefore it'll be very easy for me to get inside your range and pummel you until you submit.
That's a good point. Okay, never mind. I've been owned by facts and logic. So Sydney, final thoughts.
I'll just end it. I did save the quote that mentioned the bakers didn't want to make a cake for gay people just because I thought it was special evil. I'll preface this by this is in reference to Muslim people just in general. Aiden found himself enraged. These were the enemies. Not ranchers trying to make a living in California or pinstriped Wall Street muckety-mucks with private jets or Christian bakers who didn't want to bake a cake for a gay wedding. These monsters. These people who want to kill the decent and indecent alike, who didn't care what happened to the babies they were still fishing up from the Hudson.
So true.
Yeah.
Always saying this.
Lays it out right there. Well, here's to the indecent. Here's to the woke mob. And here's to the destruction of the project of Ben Shapiro. And everybody in his corner rizzing him up in his fucking About the Author page, and the entire world that they're trying to build.
Ben Shapiro? More like... bad.
No notes.
Y'all have a good one.